given 11 years of my life to the club, I felt I deserved a little bit of loyalty there, and it didn't happen. I am Greg Downs, and this is my Norwich City story. I started playing football probably from the age of about five at my local junior school in Northamptonshire. Yeah, I was born in Nottingham, but I then moved after in about a year down, ended up in Northamptonshire, a place called Higham Ferrers. And I went to a school called Weaver's School, which at the time was Wellingborough Technical Grammar School. That's unusual for a footballer to be at a grammar school. But so I started there, and I must admit I was under the tutelage of the PE master, Roy Pilling, who was... He's like a second father to me. You know, my parents separated when I was only eight, and he was a wonderful, wonderful teacher, you know, and he became like a second father to me, really. And my career went on, and I played for the county and things as you do like that. And then when I was 15, I got invited up to Norwich for trial. I came up here literally on New Year's Day, would you believe, 1974. And literally that same week, I stayed for a week because that was obviously the school holidays. I trained for a week with the team. The youth team coach at that time was a chap called Fred Davis. Again, great coach, and again, great mentor. You know, he was old school in the sense of, you know, you play hard, but you look after yourself and you behave yourself type of thing. So it was a good grounding for me when I came up. And I signed schoolboy forms and straight away started playing for the youth team at only 15. And at that time, they were in the Eastern Counties League. And again, I think it was a good grounding for you because it was, you know, a hard league. You know, they'd look at this Norwich City A team, as they called it in those days. And, you know, the average age of the team was about 16, 17. And you learnt to take a few knocks fairly quick. Before the end of that season, I'd even played a few games in reserves. So I can remember playing, as I say, I played in reserves even when I was only 15, which was, you know, quite good. And in those days, I have to say, I keep forgetting it, I was a centre forward. I came as a centre forward. I scored many goals. I can remember one season at school, I got 120 goals one season. You know, because again, I was playing like 3 years up, as it were. So I was always a good goal scorer in that sense, and came here and I scored goals. I was leading score for the youth team, then for the reserves, and so it went. But I was getting a bit frustrated because obviously then the years go by, as it were, and I started getting to like 17, 18, and I'm still stuck in the reserves, and you want to try and push on as much as you can. And then... In 1977, I got the chance to go to America and play for a team called Connecticut Bicentennials. Sounds corny, doesn't it? But it was an experience. You know, I played that season. I played against the New York Cosmos, which included Beckenbauer and Pele. I know, incredible, isn't it? I was a sweet 18 with, by the way, I did have hair once, and hair was down to here. And a little bit disappointing out there because again, I think I wasn't like a strapping lad, as it were, you know, 6 foot lad. So they ended up playing quite a lot on the left-hand side, which was a bit frustrating for me. So couldn't get where I wanted. And funny enough, the few times they did play me up front, I scored every time. You sort of think, well, come on, put me up front. But I came back to Norwich and things seemed to work. You know, by sort of the next Easter, I got into the first team, played a couple of games up front. I probably had the three worst debuts you could have. My debut itself for Norwich was away to Burnley in the League Cup. John Bondy was the manager at the time. I'd had a fallout with Viv Busby. He was the centre forward at the time, and I played up front. We lost 3-1. That's a great start. My next game, could you believe it, my league debut, was away at Ipswich. What a league debut that is. And I remember playing up front with Kevin Reeves that day, and I think I had about three kicks in the whole game. I think two were from Beattie and one was from Hunter. You know, I don't think I touched the ball hardly the whole game. We lost 4-0. And my home debut was Leeds United. So it was a bit of a baptism of fire, really, you know, coming into it. And then all of a sudden, I can remember it was there was snow on the ground, and all the players have been asked to go down there, and you can see it nowadays, couldn't you? That you can't see it happening nowadays, that players would actually turn up and help clear the ground. But we were all asked to go down, and we were all there. And it was at that time, Mel Machin said to me, they'd just sold Ian Davis to Newcastle. And they sort of said to me, have you ever thought about going left back? Because the previous season, my goals had dried up. You can look for excuses. I mean, I often say it was because in that season, I played up front with Peter Osgood, who came here on loan, and Martin Chivers. Now, unfortunately, those two chaps, as wonderful players that they were, and great people as well, I have to say that, they weren't going to run too far. And it was a case of, like, the ball went in the channel. Greg, get after that one. So I ended up chasing two channels, and then they said, well, your goals are dried up. I said, well, I can't do both things, can I? I can't chase the channels and get in the box. So the goals dried up a bit then. But it, in a way, it was a blessing in disguise, I suppose, in one way. I'd been on loan down to Torquay. I scored on my debut. That was actually my league debut against Rochdale. I'd scored on my debut there with a little 25-yard volley. Funny how you remember these things, isn't it? It didn't happen too often. And then, as I say, I went back to left back. I only played, I think, about 15 games in the reserves at left back and got in the first team. And the rest, as I say, is history. It's just developed. I ended up playing the next season, I think I played about 21, 22 games at left back. And I thought I did okay. And yet at the end of the season, it was quite strange, really. I got told that they would let me go. And I thought, well, I've just broken through here. What's going on? And anyway, we reported back for pre-season training. I still had a year left on my contract anyway. And I played all the pre-season games. And then I can remember we were playing Ipswich away because they used to have that Will Hire Cup at that time. And I think if we beat Ipswich, we won the Will Hire Cup sort of thing. And I thought, well, I'm getting fed up with this. I don't know where I'm coming or going. So I had a good chat with John Bond out on the training pitch at Trouse. And typical John Bond style, he just said, you ain't going anywhere. He said, at the end, I've got to play politics. He says, the squad's too big, the board are moaning, I've got to be seen to try and be let someone go. He says, oh, by the way, he says, go down to the ground now, there's a new contract waiting for you. Weird the way things happen, you know. So that was it, and then it went on from there, and I ended up, I think I played just over 200 games for Norwich in the end, so it wasn't a bad thing, although part of me still says, in my mind, I think I could have still made it as a centre forward if I'd had those breaks, you know, so it's a little bit thing that wrangles with you, but it happens, and you just get on with it, you know, as a professional. So, yeah, so I stayed on for some time there. Right, oh, dear me, look at that. Young man, full head of hair. Yeah, that was my home debut against Leeds United. As a centre-forward, chasing after all with Paul Madeley. And just behind him in the background, there was Brian Flynn, ex-Burnley and Leeds midfielder. We drew the game 2-2. From what I remember correctly. I wouldn't say I had the greatest game in the world. Again, it was quite strange, but it's funny when you look back, isn't it? Because behind us is the Barclay end, you know, which was all standing in those days. But of course, that again was when they had to try and segregate the crowds because of trouble, and because obviously back in the late 70s, there was a lot of trouble, unfortunately, at football grounds. So I think the hair was probably starting to go then, but I don't know. But he's quite a good one because, I rated Paul Madeley as probably one of the best centre-halves he's ever been. But again, he could play anywhere, couldn't he? But he was a class player. But it's funny, that game, actually, I think it's how the game has changed then. Because I remember having to chase Trevor Cherry, who played right-back for Leeds at that time. And I was trying to block him off. He was just exuberant, you know, trying to get... And I think I caught him as he played it up the line. Well, it took him about 2 minutes before I went up in the air, laying down again. And he leant over me, more or less said, next time, young man, bleep, 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 bleep. And I went and played right wing for about 5 minutes. But it was a different game in those days. You know, you had to look after yourself because you knew they were going to look after you. Yeah, I've still got the same figure. I wish. I can remember clearly, I signed on March the 15th, 1975. God, that sounds a long time ago, doesn't it? And there was... Ian Davis was just at the end, I've already mentioned, he was at the end of his apprenticeship and then got into the first team. Dougie Evans, who still lives local, was an apprentice there, Kevin Bond. And there was a few Bristol lads who, to be fair, none of them unfortunately went on to do anything about it. So it was quite a strange thing really, because I ended up for the rest of my career at Norwich almost like an in-betweener, that I wasn't one of the players that they'd bought in for money and I wasn't one of the young kids The ones who came in just after, he's sort of 2 years younger than me, was like you, Peter Mendham, Phil Lithgow, Greg Shepherd. They came in 2 years later, so I was almost like the odd one out. You know, I wasn't like one of the senior players. I wasn't one of the kids. And I must admit, I always felt, it sounds strange, but I never really felt as if I was accepted as being one or the other, you know, because the young lads were going out and about, as it were. The older lads had the money, as it were. And it was a strange situation for me. Plus, I got married young. I got married at 22. And, I don't think I ever felt as if I was really part of it, even though I gave 11 years of my life to Norwich City, you know, which in this day and age is almost unheard of.
With Mel Machin, so I want to know about what it was like when he was talking to you about switching position, but also what he was like to work with and how he coached you through that.
Yeah, it was quite strange. When, as I said, you know, we were clearing the ground up, and you know, I thought I got on okay with Mel. You know, I liked Mel. I thought he was a great coach, very deep thinking. Sometimes I have to say to his detriment, in a sense, because whilst he was a great coach, he had great ideas, and the training sessions were great. I always felt that Mel struggled a little bit at times to put his point across because he was so deep as a person. But it was obviously something that he'd discussed with John Bond at the time. I was rattling John Bond's door every sort of month saying, you know, why aren't you playing me? Why, you know, like, as you do as a young kid, you want to get on with your career. I'd been to Torquay. Torquay wanted to sign me, and John Bond said no chance, which is, you know, it gives you a little bit of a fillip, as it were. But I just felt my career wasn't going anywhere, as it were, at Norwich City, because at that time you had Kevin Rees. I'm not sure if you had Vid Busby there at the time. You had a lot of other players were at the club. Robson was there, people like that. And you suddenly look, and they brought Roger Gibbons along, and you suddenly looked at it, and I thought, I was about fifth in line. I thought, well, crikey, hang on, I was still trying to score goals, I was still playing, I thought I was playing okay in the reserves, but not really getting that chance. And I thought, you know, I was 19 at the time, and it's, you know, football's a short career, and before you know it, you can just carry on, and then suddenly, bang, you're dropped off the edge. So when he said go back to left back, I thought, the actual quote Mel used, which was quite strange, was, you got a cracking left foot, and you're nasty enough. I don't know how he meant that. I thought, it was me thinking I was quite a nice lad, but he obviously saw some sort of tenacity in me that I didn't mind leaving my foot in, as it were. I didn't mind putting a tackle in. And I think actually it did me good to see it going back to left back, because, again, I have to say, as a centre forward, I was the biggest moaner in the world. I was dreadful. You know, if the fullback didn't deliver the ball where I wanted it, God, I'd give him some stick. But I think that stood me good stead, because now when I had the ball at my feet, trying to deliver that same ball I'd required, I knew where it should go. And I must admit, one of the things Ken Brown, who, when he took over, I must admit, he and I didn't really see eye to eye. But the one thing he did say was that I probably had the best left peg in the club, as it were, you know, delivery, and he always used to say I was the best cross of the ball. Again, I still feel that came from being a centre forward, that I knew where the ball needed to be. And so, again, I must admit, I used to practice. You know, the team would, you know, training would finish, I'd be out there again, got to practice it. And the same with free kicks. I can remember seeing Ted McDougall as a kid. You know, when he struck a ball, the ball was still rising as it hit the net. As a 16-year-old, when Ted was there and I first joined, when I hit a ball, it was dipping into the net. And I kept thinking, how did you get that? You know, he's not that much bigger than me. So I used to practice. It's all about technique and about the way you hit the ball. And eventually, I suppose I got known as a little bit of a free kick, that, you know, I could hit the ball from free kicks, scored a few long range ones. And that was purely from, as a young kid, practicing. I've got to strike the ball properly. And again, that helped me when I was delivering the ball. Oh my goodness. Well, there we go. Well, I'm guessing that's taken at the training ground, because I've got the training kit on. Full head of curly hair. No, I've never seen this picture. So this is a new one, I must admit. I look like a totally different person, really, don't I? You know, it's amazing what hair does for you, isn't it? Yeah, a bit sort of unkempt. I don't know whoever took that photograph, but if they put it on the fireplace, that'll keep the kids away from it, wouldn't it? Yeah, I'd say probably 17, 18 in the way the training kit is and stuff like that, but yeah, we'd been probably at Trouse. You know, I'm not sure if it was at Trouse or one of those days. In those days, the apprentices used to have to turn up on a Monday morning and clean the ground up at Carrow Road. You know, you literally, in those days, you had grass banks behind both stands, and you literally got given a bucket and a spade, said, that's your grass bank. and you had to go and pick all the grass up, clean that bank up, and then you then had to join, you used to employ, due respect to them, some pensioners who would come in and sweep all the, in between the seats in the south stand and all that, and we'd have to go and help them then get all that up into buckets just as the wind then blew it and chucked it all over again and we'd start again. But it was funny because you'd have two players who would have to go in and clean the boots on the Saturday, and the other six or seven apprentices, that's what we had in those days, would be out on the ground. But the worst thing was when you have to clean the toilets. And the toilets in those days were like just open air jobs, you know. And the other good thing was, because when you think about it, in those days, when I was an apprentice, I joined on £7 a week. And whenever you played West Ham, they used to throw coins. And you used to double your wages because you'd walk around the track, there's 50p, there's that, you know, and you know, there were pound notes in those days, but so it was all coinage, but you'd almost like double your money on the side, you know. It was great, yeah, I'll do that. You'd fight to see who can get in front of the Barclay and where the West Ham supporters were. So that was scary. What can I say with John Bond? I mean, he was this larger than life character. I mean, he was one of those sort of people that, you know, he walks into a room and everyone straight away is like, he just had that presence about him. Unbelievable coach, you know, every coaching session was a joy, you know, because it was all based on, you've got to get forward, we're there to create, he used to say, I want you to excite me, and it's funny actually, argument, so I'm digressing slightly, but in my later career when I was manager at Hereford, we played against Shrewsbury and John was manager at Shrewsbury, and I can remember looking across at the dugout as we both stood in the technical areas as it were, and I can remember thinking, my goodness me, hasn't life gone in full circle? You know, there's big John Bond there and I'm here as manager, and it was surreal. One funny thing, I remember a little story that a good friend of mine, when I moved to Coventry in the end, was a right back who'd been at Coventry and Birmingham, Harry Roberts. He was left back as well, and he played at Birmingham under John Bond. And he tells, and Harry was a bit of a celebrity in the Midlands, he actually bought his own books out and things like that because they were so funny. Brilliant stories he told. And one of the stories he tells is that when John Bond was manager at Birmingham, he took hold of a lad called Robert Hopkins, little winger, good little player, nasty little so-and-so. And he said, Hoppy, I'll have you playing for England. He said, and Harry's book says that if John Bond had stayed at Birmingham, Hoppy probably would have played for England. He said, the trouble is the defence would have played for the Rovers' return. He said, because we never did any defensive coaching. Absolutely no. And so in a way, and it's quite true, you know, myself having come from a centre forward to a left back, I've always got a phone to left back, so get on with it. So everything that I sort of learned as a fullback, I almost had to almost like just try and pick up as I went along, because John Bond just didn't do it. He literally came in, there was, you know, we turned up for training, all the press were there and it was all that sort of thing. John was outside, and then literally we went out on the training ground and John wasn't there and he'd gone. And it wasn't, you know, normally when a manager gets a sack, you know, you get the team together, say, lads, or in his case, it wasn't the sack, he decided to go to Manchester City. But normally you get the players in and you, because you had that camaraderie, you built up. But John didn't, he was like literally gone. And it was like, oh, okay, so what's happening now? Ken got the job to the end of the season. And funny enough, Ken again, as he put it, when I had my testimonial, he put it in it that I almost was, the reason why he got the job, because we went to Coventry, where they'd never ever won. We won 1-0. And yours truly got another 25-yard volley against Les Sealy, although I did think he sort of jumped over a bus as the ball went in, because I think he should have saved it, but I don't know what he did. But we scored 1-1-0, and Ken got the job permanently after that. So obviously I'll have to remember not to shoot from 25 yards next time. I didn't play in that one again, you know, one of my times when I got left out of the team again, I think, from what I can remember. But no, I meant because we went up there and got hammered about six, I think, yeah. If I remember correctly. We did, and I think that was the time when John tried to jump down from the director's box and more or less nearly broke his neck, I think. He was trying to desperately to get down there because Kevin Bond was still playing for us. And I think John apparently wanted to try and console Kevin, you know. Yeah, it's just one of those things. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it didn't last long enough to John, because I still felt that he had a big enough character that he could have quite easily managed one of the top teams in the country. He had that, as I say, that persona about him that, and that confidence in himself that I think, you know, for someone like Man United, the way they historically play under Ferguson and people like that, he'd have been great for someone like that, because he was a big enough character to take that on, and he would have played the game in the way that they wanted the game played. You know, because I think he was the one who, without a doubt, he put Norwich City on the map, without a doubt. I know we got promoted under Saunders in the first place back in the 70s, but it was John Bond who put Norwich City on the map because of his flamboyant, you know, with a big cigar and the sheepskin coat and things like this, you know. But he was a great character, great company.
Let's get into 1981. The club were relegated that yep. season from the top flight. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about how that season was and how it felt.
Yeah, it was a disappointing season, really, that we... I didn't think we were as bad as, if like results suggested. I think it's one of those sort of games. But the one game really that sticks in my mind is probably the last game against Leicester. And Sunderland were playing away at Liverpool. And I think it worked out, as long as we got a better result than Sunderland, we stayed up. And I can remember we went 2-1 up, I think it was, against Leicester. And I can remember the ball went into midfield and it filtered through onto throughout the ground that Liverpool had gone 1 up. And I can remember the ball went into Mick Maguire and he passed it back to the goalkeeper from near the halfway line. And I can remember, which was a bit naughty because he was still a senior player, and I gave him some mighty... He said, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, they lose. We've just got to make sure we keep this result." I said, "Yeah, but what if they turn it around?" As it happens, the actual word that came out was totally wrong because Sunderland actually won 1-0. And we lost 3-2. And I think Jim Melrose got a hat-trick, if I remember correctly. But, it wasn't for want of trying. I mean, we peppered Leicester that day and unfortunately left ourselves open. Myself and I think Richard Simmons was playing right back at the time that day. And we were just bombing on. I mean, I spent most of my time, I think, almost as left winger, just trying to get the goals, you know. But it left us open at the back and Jim Melrose got himself a hat-trick. But it's probably one of the most disappointing feelings. I wouldn't say the most disappointing feeling. I think the most disappointing feeling for me was obviously in 85. But... at that time, it was probably the low in my career at that time. And just disappointing because, as I say, I felt we were better than that. Yeah.
Going into 82 then, because this was an interesting season for you, wasn't it?
Very interesting.
The season, yeah. You were dropped a bit as well. So
yeah.
Just take me through what that campaign was like, because you must have had a battle on it at various points.
And... It was really annoying because we start the season off again and... We got to more or less, I think, the end of September, middle of October. Funny enough, I've looked it up not long ago, funny enough. I think at that time we were sixth or seventh in the league. I think with something like 1-3 or something like that. I think we'd actually 1-2, drawn 3, lost 2, something like that. But we were seventh in the league because it was still 2 points for a win in those days. And I think really this is, in a way, summarises my relationship with Ken Brown in that way, because I thought I was playing okay, but Joe Royal by then had come to the club, and Joe, as you know, his big mate was Willie Donaghy, and Willie has, ever since that time, when Joe got into management, Willie Donaghy was always his assistant, so there was a close affinity between the two, which is fine, I've got no problem with that at all, but the problem was then Ken Brown decided to bring Willie Donaghy back from America to play. Now, as I said, we were at that time seventh. We had what I call a steady start after getting relegated. I think the club, between then and Christmas, won one game. And of course, again, like I did before, I'm banging on his door saying, "You know, what are you doing to me?" The press was good for my ego, as it were. Every week, you know, great downs, you know, why is he not playing and things like that. And I think one of the big things... I can remember we went down to Cardiff and apparently we'd gone down the night before and I didn't know and we're out and I'd just then been told in the team meeting at the hotel that I wasn't playing. I thought, oh, another wasted trip down there. And I can remember Sir Arthur South, bless him, he came across the car park and I was outside at the time. He came and shook my hand and says, "Oh, Lady Cardiff sends her love. Absolutely wonderful. Brilliant, you're back in the team." I said, "Well, send the love back. I'm afraid I'm not playing." And he was like, "What do you mean not playing?" And apparently in the EDP, the night before, it's Greg Downs is back. He will be playing. Da, da, da. No, I wasn't. We lost the game 1-0. And then eventually I got back in on Boxing Day. So it's that long. It was a long old break out of it. And it was not the best either. We played Luton and lost 3-1 at home. I thought, well, that's a good start. But we then went on a run where I think we only lost one in the next 19. Unbelievable run. And as I say, it's history. We got promoted. I know that, I got player of the year. And I know Ken Brown was not happy with that. And you can understand it as well. You know, he left me out for the season. I come back in. And we didn't get promoted because of me. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, again, I mean, there was many factors. Confidence is a great thing in football. It started going. Martin O'Neill also came back to us at that time. He was a major impact. I must say, you know, and I can remember the last day of the season, we had the last game. I think we played, I think it was Charlton. We played the last game of the season, something like that. And Duncan at that time had retired. He was in charge of the awards and all that sort of thing. And he came up to me and said, "You got player of the year?" I went, "Yeah, all right, have a laugh, aren't you?" God, it's not being funny. You don't think when you've had that sort of a season that you'd be player of the year, but it's something I'm very, very proud of. You know, I think, again, blowing my own trumpet, I think I was one of the only few players that got every award, like the travelling supporters, the, you know, this, that and the other. I think I got five awards in the end. I got different, this, London supporters, Lowestoft supporters. And it was wonderful for me. And I was, I was 22 years of age. And it was a great fill-up for me. It sort of made you feel good, you know. But I know it didn't sit too well with some people. Goodness me, look at that. Now, the hair is now starting to go. With me on a pool table, looking at that, or snooker table. I'm not sure what it is at this point. I think it's a snooker table, this one. Again, I wouldn't... That, again, wasn't too long before I left. I've got a tie on, so it's a bit posh to be playing snooker with a tie on, isn't it? But you can see there that the barnet's starting to recede a little bit on top. So I should have obviously asked the photographer to take a different photograph here. But no, I used to play a lot of snooker in those days. And I must admit, when I went to Coventry, I played league snooker with Steve Guzovic. So my highest weight was 70. So in those days, I wasn't too bad. You know, I misspent youth. Now I'd be lucky to get 7. I think, but it was something that was taken well. I got my wedding ring on, so I got married in 1981. So I'm guessing it's around about the maybe 83, 84 period of time. But so obviously it was one of those things where they go out and whether we've had a night out or some, you know, some sort of do. The fact I've got a tie on, I must have been doing something, whether presenting trophies or doing something like that. But I thought I was a little bit of a Dennis Taylor. My father had a pub in Norwich, so I used to play pool in his pub, but snooker-wise, I can't really remember where we played. I didn't actually play league snooker in Norwich. It was more when I went down to Coventry that I started playing, if like, league snooker and getting into it a little bit more. And I must admit, that was always because it was a Thursday night, so we used to sort of say to John Sillett down at Coventry, "Are we all right to play, as long as you don't drink?" But now I'm trying to remember. Crikey, the wallpaper's great, isn't it? The flock wallpaper on the end of it. My goodness me.
Just in an even-handed way. Because obviously, I mean, you played under Ken, didn't you?
For yeah.
Four or five years.
Yeah.
So just in terms of what cause both obviously huge characters in Norwich City's history in terms of managers. So how did they compare in terms of Ken and John?
Ken wasn't as flamboyant as John. I don't know. I mean, I think it'd be wrong for me to give my personal opinion here because, as I said, I've already stated, you know, Ken and I, we didn't really get on too well. I don't know, really. I think it was a strange situation. I think the sort of the nail in the coffin, as it were, between our relationship was when we won the Milk Cup. It was my testimonial year. And we'd had a situation at Liverpool where... We'd played Grimsby in the quarterfinals in midweek, 1-1-0, and playing in front of me at that time is Louis Donowa. Louis and I had a bit of a fallout during the game at Grimsby. In other words, I think it was literally a situation where we were 1-0 up. John Dean had gone down injured for some time, so there's a bit of a break in the game. There's only 2 minutes to go. They were going to take a big long throw. So I'd called Louis back to pick up a fella called Ford, who played for them on the right, and I positioned myself on the edge of the six-yard box for any flick-on. And the ball come in, they get the flick-on, I get the header away and get clattered by Ford. We get it away anyway, and Louis is halfway up the pitch. And I've said, and I've had a right go at Louis Morris, "Hey, you should have been picking him up, do you know what I mean? You should have blocked him off, things like the other." Anyway, it went on. So we then go straight from Grimsby up to Liverpool. It's one of the only games on at that time because the snow was on the ground at the time and Liverpool under soil heating. We go up there and lo and behold, literally after about 10 minutes, Louis gets the ball, lays it back to me, leaves it short with Nickel, the fullback, didn't block him off. I then had to come through it. I end up having 5 stitches in my ankle at half time. without any anaesthetic because I didn't have time for it to take. And it was quite fun. I remember this drunken, excuse me, not because fat he's Irish, but he was a drunken Irish doctor. And I remember his hand was a little bit like that. I was like, I hope you get in the right place. So I had the stitches in and went and played the second half. Yeah, you can't imagine that today, can you? But the same thing happened on that game that, again, they were going to dip slightly different. The ball's gone into Dalglish, back to Kennedy. Kennedy whips it in. John Walk comes crashing in. Again, I'd said to him, I'll take the same position. You say we'd walk on the edge of the box. What happens this time? Walk comes in, crashes the ball. Great header, but hits the bar. He headed that hard. The ball bounced back nearly the halfway line. And Lewis, once again, is stood 10 yards outside the box. And I've had a bit of a snap, and we ended up having a bit of a fallout, which got the pages and all that in the papers. And Ken Brown more or less then said, well, you can't do that, etc. I apologised to the team, and it ended up that I then got left out for, we then played Birmingham in an FA Cup replay, which I couldn't play because my ankle by then obviously had blown up. I then didn't get back in the side for, crikey, about 6 weeks. And I had a chat with Ken Brown again. The fact that, I spent 11 years here, and Ken Brown had assured me that I would be playing or something, be within the squad, because there was only one sub then, but I would be in the squad for Wembley. And I thought, fair enough. We get to Wembley, we go down to Beaconsfield Hotel, and then he announces on the Thursday, no, you're not in the squad, you're not this, and he brought back John Devine in a sub, and God, good luck to John. At the end of the day, I'm pleased for him. But John hadn't been in the squad since October. And to suddenly get, having given 11 years of my life to the club, I felt I deserved a little bit of loyalty there. And it didn't happen. And again, what rankled even more is, again, as I say, all that time I'd played in all the other previous rounds and then got put on the bench for the two games against Ipswich. And I ended up, I didn't get a medal. I didn't get any of the bonus money. I got absolutely nothing. And then I decided, well, that's it. I think my time's run out now at Norwich. Ken Brown offered me a free transfer, which I was chuffed to bits with. I was only 26. But then at the 11th hour, when he knew then I was going to go to Coventry, he then turned around and said, no, I want to keep you. And from a free transfer, slapped a £300,000 price tag on me, which, again... And it does wrangle you, because to me that's not the way you should do business, and I think a player deserves a bit more than that, to be dealt with that way. So we had to go to a tribunal where obviously I gave my bit, and Coventry had to pay £50,000 out in the end, but it was cheap, but there we are. Where are you going? Oh my goodness. Well, it's myself. I'm not too sure where this is at now, this one. So obviously later in the career, got the Paul Withy shirts on. I'm guessing that's almost probably my last season before I moved on to Coventry. There's Dennis Van Wyk in the background there. So me having a shot, which probably hit the roof of the Barclay End or something like that, as you do. That is definitely at home, because I've just now seen the advertising board, which has got Withy Windows on the back. So it must be at Carrow, because they weren't sort of a national company, as it were. But... yeah, I used to get on well with the people from Paul Withy. They were nice people. Obviously, that's when we wore those shorts that left nothing to be desired, as it were. Can't get any shorter. My God, they were budgie smugglers, weren't they? It's weird, when you think the fact they're getting like 26,000 every week now. In those days, clubs were struggling a little bit more. I think our average home gate was only about 15,000 then. But it was at a time, obviously, when there was a lot of trouble in the stands, and unfortunately, a lot of people got put off from it. And I think also, I don't think clubs were as, how can I put it, commercially aware of what could be gained from a football club. And of course, since then, you've had Sky come in and all this sort of thing. So you've now got a saturation that everybody now knows about football, whereas in those days, you only had Match of the Day or something on a Sunday. That was the only football you could watch. You didn't have all this European football. You didn't have games like 5 days a week, as it were. Coming. So it was a different era in that sense. And whilst we might have been local heroes, as it were, but you weren't national heroes like they are nowadays. Funny enough, I think one of the quotes that one of our ex-managers, Glenn Roeder, I know I was speaking to one of his staff at a golf day once, and he used to use an expression that was usually used, and that was at Makem or Breakem. And it was hard like that, you know, that the senior pros would be, they were horrible to the apprentices. But it was a case of that, you know, you'd have one dressing room at Trouse, for instance, which was the youth team and reserves, and the other one was the first team. And it was a case of, like, I've got to get in that dressing room. You know, because if you got in that dressing room, you knew you got into the first team. So it was almost that thing, like, you take the knocks and you come back, you know. And if you had a bad game, my goodness me, you knew about it. You know, the coaching staff would rip into you. Whereas nowadays, from what I've seen and what I'm told, you know, I talked to a few friends like Big Oggy, Steve Gruzvich, who's still at Coventry. You know, it's a totally different ball game now. You know, you can't have a go at the kids anymore. You know, and in those days, it was the way it was. You know, it was a hard game, you know, and the idea was that you took the knocks and you came back again. So it was a different world, really. It was a very strange thing. I can remember myself, Dale Gordon, we were the ones who missed out. And I have to say, the game itself, I didn't take a lot of notice of. You know, you sit there, you got your nice grey suits on, as we did. You're sitting sort of two rows back. And I was just sort of more or less, yeah, you're looking at the game and you're thinking, like, you know, we've gone one up, then they've had a penalty miss and things like that. And you think, well, it's going to be our day. It was a dreadful game. It's a dreadful game. But, they got the result, which was great for the club. And I was honestly chuffed to bits for everyone involved. But I didn't feel part of it. You know, I can remember we went back to a hotel that night. The players who had played were drained. The players who didn't, it was party time. It was like, well, we'll enjoy ourselves anyway. We get something out of this. But it wasn't a good feeling. You know, again, I'd made up my mind then I was going to leave. And so whilst I was happy for the club and the people associated with, like, Sir Arthur and people like, yeah, and I must admit, I had a lot of time for Sir Arthur. I thought he was a cracking bloke. And you could tell that he loved the club. And, you know, I'm a great believer that, you know, if you're involved in a club, you give it everything you've got on and off the field. Otherwise, why bother? So it was sad. It was a sad time for me, but there you go. Again, whether I'm wrong or not, having been a manager myself, so I understand the pressures. You know, I was, I suppose, in a situation when I got the job at Hereford. I was probably in a similar situation to Ken was when he got the job here at Norwich, that I'd gone to Hereford with John Sillett as his assistant or player coach. John then decided, we literally went there in the summer. John decided at Christmas he'd had enough and just walked away and more or less left me holding the baby, as it were. And I always got the feeling that, again, that's just my personal opinion. Whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know. But I always got the feeling that Ken was never totally secure in his job. You know, it's like if Ken bought a player, that player was going to play come hell or high water. Because unlike today, where they buy a player for £10 million and stick him in the reserves. In those days, if you bought a player for £100,000, and I always got the feeling that if Ken didn't play him, then the board would say, well, hang on, you bought him in. Why is he not playing? We've wasted £100,000. It's just a figure out of the air. So therefore, I always got the feeling then that there were certain players, and it was something that really got to me. I remember, funny, if you go back to 81, when we got relegated, all of a sudden in the press, it was a case of, like, can we hold on to Chris Woods? Can we hold on to Dave Watson? Can we hold on to John Dean? Can we hold on to this player, that player, that player? And they're all players that have been bought in. Now, my argument to that was, well, hang on, if they're such great players, how come we got relegated? You can't turn around and say it was just the local lads, like myself, Paul Haylock, or Richard Simmons, Peter Mendham. Do you know what I mean? And it was something I always felt was wrong in, you know, in the way that the setup was. You know, because at the end of the day, we get relegated because at the end of the day, I thought we were better than the team to get relegated. But at the end of the day, we did get relegated. And everyone has to take their share of the criticism for getting relegated. But it just felt that, as usual, it was always, well, it must be them. As I say, Ken Brown was going to give me the free transfer, and I had a chance going to Derby with Arthur Cox as manager. I could have gone to Derby, who were in Division 3, and he offered me three times more signing on fee and a third more money per week than Coventry City did. But I went to Coventry because I wanted to play top league still. And the fact that Coventry, unfortunately, at the malaise of Norwich, had stayed in the top league. And it was a case, well, I'm going to Coventry. You know, I was 26. I mean, Ken Brown actually said to me when he turned around and said, "No, I want you to stay." He said, "Because you're great with the kids. I've been in the reserves." He said, "You've been great with the kids." He says, "You know, there's probably a coaching role for you." And I said to him, "I'm 26, not 36. You know, if he'd have said it to me when I was, say, 32, I might have thought, well, maybe that's not a bad way of looking at it now, because it was always my intention to go into the coaching eventually. But not at 26. You know, I still had a bit more years playing there left in me.
Is it fair to say that Colf and 87 made up for
that? Yeah, I must say, it wasn't very... probably the nice thing I ever did, but I can remember we actually came back after we'd won it, and we played Norwich early on, probably in about the second or third game, I think, here, and I think it was a boring 0-0 draw, I think, from what I can remember. And we were in the tunnel, and Ken Brown came up to me, and I have to say, I've never been two-faced. You know, I've always said to people that if you ask me a question, I'll give you an answer. If you've already got the answer you want, then don't ask me the question. You know, because I will give you an honest answer. And I thought it was a little bit for Ken. You know, he came up to me like, shook my hand, and said, "Oh, I never thought you'd win it." I said, "Well, that's two things you got wrong then, isn't it?" You know, it was one of those things. You know, it turned out great for me. And I must admit, again, not too sort of nice of me, I suppose. I always say that in my own little tongue-in-cheek way, I got the big one. You know, because when you grow up as a kid, all you dream about is winning the FA Cup. And, you know, and it still puts hairs, what's left, on the back of my neck, because it was still the greatest part of my footballing career. And it was done with a group of players at Coventry. And if I made that, I think that was the difference. The Coventry team was a team of mates. I mean, honestly, apart from Big Cyril Regis, who, by the way, was the loveliest man you could ever meet. God bless him. The rest of the team was, if you like, almost like, I don't know what they call them, like journeymen, I suppose, is what you call them. You know, you had Brian Kilcline at centre back, Trevor Peake, who was probably read the game better than anyone else had played. Brian Burrows, who was normal right back, came from Everton at the same time as me. They were a group of players who we got on great socially. Whereas at Norwich, I didn't think there was quite that togetherness. You know, there was like those that had it and those that didn't have it almost. You know, it was that sort of way. Whereas at Coventry, everyone was on a parallel. And, you know, if you had a night out, the whole team went out together. And I think our success was built on that camaraderie, because John Sillett loved all that, you know. He loved the lads having a drink together, and he'd come out and join us. We just had that belief in it. And I said earlier on, you know, the confidence, like when we got promoted in 82, you know, confidence is something that it just rolls on with you. And all of a sudden, you don't believe you can get beaten. And that's how we were, you know, before every game, here we go, we'll go again. And it proved right that... I believe, deservedly won the FA Cup. I was like Red Adair. Honestly, I must have played for more. I had more clubs than Jack Nicklaus, as they say. It was a weird thing because, again, I think I was 36 when I left Hereford, and I still felt I had a bit of football left in me. And I went to Redditch, where I played about three games, and that was because Ian Atkins used to be manager at Sunderland. He'd been released, and he was playing from just to keep fit, and he said, he rang me up one day, to finish a couple of games. I went, yeah. And it's funny, it's not until when you finish your career, you think, well, he played for that club. I think, well, he played two games just for a run out to keep fit. The nicest sort of season I had, I played for Mull Barton for one season. And that was to say that I could play with my son. So I played in the same team as my son for a season. And that was lovely. Crikey. There we go. That's obviously one of these games that we played. And it's myself and Paul Haylock. Paul at that time had discovered lager. I couldn't believe it. Actually, I looked at him. I think Paul had put on about 3 or 4 stone by then. But it was good to see him. And again, by that time, I think he'd moved down to Kent. He was living around Sittingbourne. And I actually played against him when I was playing for Merthyr Tydfil. He was at Sittingbourne, and we played against him then. But years go by a bit too quick. Now, I think that was about 15 years ago now. Just got older and older and older, unfortunately. But it was good to see him. But obviously, Paul couldn't be bothered to play that day. It's nice when you meet up with people, you know, that you haven't seen for a long, long time, and, you know, you reminisce a little bit and you talk about what they're doing now, and you talk about your careers and about, oh, you remember that happening and that happening, and end of season trips and things like that, you know, which can't be aired. And it's just one of those, it's almost like a camaraderie that you do get, you know. And again, you know, I've spoken about how different it was at Coventry and Norwich. At Coventry now, when we get together, and we get together at least once a year, and we play golf and have a few beers together, and everyone turns up. And it's as if, like, we've never been apart. The banter literally starts within the first 5 minutes, you know, the Mickey taking out on the course and things like that, because it was a great time for me at Coventry, and I had 5 years there. And, you know, a bit in and out, because that's the way your career goes, but it was a great time. It was a place I enjoyed living in Coventry, being a Midlands lad originally. And so it was always like, for me, moving home a little bit. But funny enough, my home has always been in Norfolk. So it's a bit of a contradiction in that sense. But that was nice, because I was amongst people, if you like, the way I'd grown up and the people I knew in that sense. But Norfolk is where I've always loved being, and that's why I came back. And I know I'll never leave Norfolk. I think the biggest question that people ask me is, you know, what made you join the police? Because there's, you know, for most people's eyes, there's nothing far so far removed, if you like, from being a footballer to becoming a police officer. But the problem is, as footballers in my generation, so we didn't get paid big money. I mean, I don't mind, I'm openly saying it, like when I won the FA Cup, I was on £400 a week, you know, and we got £2,000 for winning it. You know, Tottenham got 10,000 for losing it, which wasn't bad. But it was a totally, you know, we didn't earn the sort of money they earn nowadays, that even the internationals, when they retired, had to go and work, you know, from that era. So you look at it and you apply for different jobs, and the fact that I'd been manager at Hereford, in even at that level, you're still in charge of £500,000 budget. And you're hands-on with people. You know, you've got a staff of about 30 people still, which you're talking to daily, trying to obviously get them to be better, and you're trying to get things working. But as soon as you apply for a job outside football, all I was getting from people was, yeah, but that's football, isn't it? And so you get frustrated with it. You think, well, I don't know, maybe I need to start looking at different things. And my younger brother joined the police force, and he said to me, why don't you have a crack at it? I thought I was too old at 39, but no. So I applied, and I decided to come back to Norfolk, and got in. And I must admit, I joined with the thought that, in a way, it is like football still. It should still be that it's still a team. You're still there looking after each other. I have to say, in all due respects, it's not been quite that way. It's been, in that sense, been a little bit of a disappointment. But then, you know, I've managed to 21 and a half years. A lot of it I've enjoyed, a lot of it I haven't, but that's the same as anybody else in work. You know, some things you enjoy, some things you don't. But now I'm, you know, I've sort of now gone semi-retired. You know, I've hit the big bad 60. And so I'm working back with the police, but as a civilian, and thoroughly enjoying what I do at the present time. My Norwich City hero. You know, I think, funny enough, I can remember we went on a mid-season break to Malta once, and it was dreadful weather. So why we went there, I don't know. But we only were there for about 3 days. I can remember sitting in the bar with Mick Shannon and Mel Machin, and we were just discussing, because it was pouring down with rain outside, and all of a sudden Mick Shannon, his typical Hampshire bro, you know, who's the best player you've played with? And I can remember saying to him that, funny enough, and he ripped into me, but I actually said at the time, the best player I played with for my game, and that's quite important, was Mick Maguire. And I can remember him sort of, you know, Mick Maguire sort of thing, and I said, hang on a bit, you said he was the best player I played with. And the reason I said that was because Mick Maguire, even whenever Mick was having a bad game, he never hid. Every time I had the ball, he would show for the ball. And that buys you time. So in other words, I play it back to Mick, 99 times out of 100 to give it to me back. But it just bought you that extra couple of seconds just to look up and give you a bit more time on the ball. And I said, and funny enough, being on the left-hand side, you don't get too many, excuse me, left-side centre midfielders, if you see what I mean. You know, even at Norwich, I can't really think, apart from Graham Paddon, who by the time I played with Graham Paddon was then playing wide left, there wasn't too many players I could actually play 1-2s with. Whereas on the right-hand side, you always had players that were more comfortable playing 1-2. So invariably, I would have to play the ball into the strikers because I'd have no one else showing inside. But Mick Maguire would always show. And that's why I said he was probably the best player I played with. Apart from that, as regards ability, then I would have to probably go with Martin O'Neill. I think in the players that we had here at the time, Martin O'Neill was magnificent. You know, I think he transformed the club, his ability, the way he went past people, and his professionalism, and I have to say his humour. We roomed together, Martin O'Neill and I, and I can remember, funny enough, the last game when we got promoted, we went to Sheffield Wednesday. I roomed with him. We got into the hotel room, put his bags down, and he said, "I've got a taxi order." I said, "Well, where are we going?" And Martin, I don't know if you know, but he was a student in law before he joined football, and he wanted to go into the Yorkshire Ripper had just been arrested at that time, and he wanted to go and see where he'd been arrested. So we had to go in a taxi, and I thought, well, I had absolutely no interest in whatsoever. But I thought, well, you're the senior bloke here, let's go, and off we went. But he was so much fun, Martin. He was, again, very, very intelligent man, and I used to love room with him because we'd end up discussing this, that and the other, and it was just nice to have someone with that intelligence to talk to. Tell us something we don't know about your Norwich spell. Yeah, it's very hard, that, really, because, as I said, I think I've always been quite an open book, really, in that sense. That I don't know, I think I probably put a transfer request in probably on four different occasions, you know, because, again, through being frustrated about the way it was going. I think not a lot of people know, actually. I was, when I finished my apprenticeship, I was actually, I don't know if it's the right word, I won't use that word, but I got offered the chance to actually go to Ipswich. As a centre forward, I was centre forward then, so I'd played against Ipswich quite often. Of course, at that time they had Alan Brazil in their youth team, and I was in ours. And every time we played against each other, I'd score against them, and Alan would score against us. But when my apprenticeship came up to an end, I'd actually got the chance. Word had come to me that Ipswich wanted to sign me. At the time, obviously, I was coming to 18. I hadn't had really any chance of getting in the first team, and you sort of think, Bobby Robson was manager down there, and you think, maybe that might be the way forward. But in the end, and it's a strange thing the way it's changed now because of the Bosman ruling, but in those days, a club could hold your registration for at least 2 years if you didn't sign. So I literally got held gunpoint, more or less. No, in fact, John Bond called me in and called my father in and more or less said, he's been got at any down the road. So word had obviously got round. And he said, well, I'll tell you now, he's not going anywhere. And I held out because they were going to give, when you signed a professional form, by that time you're on £15 a week as an apprentice, and the club paid £10 a week for your digs. When you signed as a pro, full pro, you were on £30 a week, but you had to pay tax now suddenly, and had to pay your own dig. So you're actually worse off as a pro than you were as an apprentice. And I held out to get £36 a week. So yeah, did it, £36 a week. So it's different. I think it nearly ended early. I suppose, this sounds very big-headed, but I honestly don't believe there was any doubt that I would sign pro forms or I'd be offered pro forms. Yeah, I was leading scorer all through the youth team reserves. I got into the reserves at Norwich at 15. I was a regular, more or less, from then on. And I can remember the other apprentices, because one by one, you used to have to go and knock on and by that time, it was John Saint, he was the youth team coach. You have to go and knock on his door and sort of say, I need to have a chat, am I getting a contract, am I not? And all I can remember the other apprentices saying, well, are you going to go and ask or what? I went, well, I don't. He said, we haven't got to, have you, but you've got to do it, sort of thing. So, sounds very big-headed, but I knew I was going to get offered a pro contract. I think the times then when it nearly ended, I think you get frustrated. I came back from America and you're thinking, you know, and then I went on loan to Torquay. And that's when you think to yourself, well, they could have sold me to Torquay. I could have turned it down and said, no, I'm not going because I had another year's contract. But you do then think, ooh, if they're prepared to sell me to Torquay, is that going to be the end of my time here? So that's probably the only time I thought, ooh. But you are always, because you only ever sign a 2 or 3 year contract, as a youngster like that, when you're in and out the side, you're always a little bit dubious about whether you're going to get offered another contract. And then you think, well, does someone else want me? I think which didn't help me, funny enough, which we've elaborated on, the fact I lost my hair early didn't help me. And I can remember, I'm being serious now, because I can remember playing in a reserve game when I was 25, so it was that last sort of season. And I can remember playing at Luton, and it chucked it down with the rain. And my mother told me the story that she was up in the stand watching, because she just travelled down from Northamptonshire to watch it. And someone from the crowd shouted out, you know, to Luke player, go on, you can't beat that old bugger. And my mother turned around and said, he's only 25. And I think that was a thing. And even when we got to the cup final, you know, and I was 28 when I won the FA Cup, again, in a lot of the reports, he said, the veteran Greg Downs. I thought, well, I'm only 28. So the fact losing your hair, I think sometimes people thought you were older than you were. And I honestly believe that curtailed a little bit at times. Maybe offers you could have moved to other clubs, you don't know. But a lot of clubs, well, he's getting on a bit now. We want to go younger than that. But maybe that's just me thinking that way. Who knows? Favourite Norwich City moment? Without a doubt, it's got to be when I won the Player of the Year. It was something I'm very, very proud of. It's something I believe as every footballer to get voted Player of the Year is something a bit special. When you actually receive the plaudits in the last game of the season, it's a very personal sort of thing for that. You know, you're there on the pitch and you know, you're getting the Barry Butler trophy, which I've still got it's still up on my shelving, as it were, in my house. I still parade it very proudly. And it's something that, it's very special to me, very special. And who do you miss and why? Crikey. I don't know, really. I think, thankfully, my mother's still alive, so that's a massive thing. I've got one of my sons lives locally, the other one lives down in Essex, and I think I miss him not being so close at times, you know, because I talk to my son lives in Norfolk, we talk sort of every other day, if not, my older son, who's the director of a company down in Essex, so we don't talk so often, so it's a bit of a sad that, but he's got to get on with his own career, so, which is great for him. I think I miss the banter that we have with the Coventry lads, and I know that a lot of the team are still local to Coventry, and they all meet up once a month and go for a beer. So I miss that, if you like, the crack that we always had together, and it was a special time. But I think I've been quite fortunate in my life. I grew up wanting to be a professional footballer, and dreamed of winning the FA Cup, and managed to do both. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm a very, very lucky man. Who don't you miss? Ooh. I don't know. Again, it's hard to say that. I'm not the person who holds grudges. You know, that things happen in life, and I'm a great believer that they happen for a reason. You know, and to me, you've got to be strong enough to just move on. You know, things, I didn't like certain things that happened to me at Norwich City, I must admit, and the way it was done. And as I say, I always felt a little bit betrayed at when I was at Norwich. You know, I always felt that I was, if you like, whenever we lost a game, leave, you know, myself out or Paul Hale or something. It was like the local lads who'd come through the ranks, if it were, that got left out. And I always felt that was wrong, because I always felt in a way that we were the ones who put more effort into it, because we'd grown up with the love of the club. When you get bought in, you haven't quite got there. But having said that, I had that same outlook when I went to Coventry, to Birmingham. As far as I'm concerned, I was employed by that club, and I would do everything I could for them on and off the field. And that's the way I've always lived my life, you know, and I've done it the same in whatever I've done. You know, give it 110%. I think as time goes by, when we have meetings, I will miss seeing someone like Cyril Regis, who sadly passed away last year. And that was a big shock to us. You know, again, one of the nicest men you could ever meet. And that was really sad. You know, again, we're all getting that age now. We're all getting, you know, I'm myself 60 now. A few of the lads are getting close to 60 and people like that, some older. But we're getting that stage in our lives now where, unfortunately, things are going to start happening. And I just hope it doesn't happen for some time. Norwich City regret was, I think in a way my regret for Norwich City was, I don't know if you call it regret, but obviously it would be not playing in the Milk Cup. I think that was the biggest thing. You know, as I say, coming here as a kid, going through the ranks, as it were, climbing up the ladder, as it were, and then to have it taken away from me. That was something that really hit me hard, you know, at that time. And I don't regret leaving Norwich, because I felt it was the right time for me at that time. But it's hard to say. I mean, obviously, I've had a few things in my personal life that you regret, that you either should have done or shouldn't have done. But that's a personal thing. And but again, you move on, you live with it, and you get on with it. So you can't think about what happened. You just got to look for the future. Was the grass greener? Yeah, it definitely was going to Coventry. Without doubt, it was greener. You know, I've fulfilled everything I wanted to fulfil. Certain things that weren't green. I mean, again, going as manager to Hereford, I would say it was I got offered the job, and you do it for the right reasons, because you believe then if you can make success of that, you can then go on to other things. It turned out in the end, I wouldn't say a poison chalice because maybe that's not the right sort of phrase, but it was a never win. It was a no win situation. You know, I took over there and I had the lowest wage bill in the Football League. I was player manager. I had no assistant, no coach, no scout. Oh, it was fun. The whole team was free transfer. There was no signing on fees. And yet I kept him in the Football League for 3 years, still doing it that way. And I suppose the irony of it was that they got rid of me. Having got rid of the debt, that when I took over, they were £450,000 in debt. And when I left, they had no debt. So it all depends how you quantify success. I believe that I was a success there in what I did. The irony of it was 18 months after they got rid of me, they were relegated into the out of Football League. So it's hard to say. It's hard to say. But it would have been quite nice to have had a bit of help. I must admit, it's not until you finish. Apparently, I looked gaunt. Apparently, I think I was about 10 and a half stone by the time I finished, you know, because it was a case of like taking training every day, having to train myself afterwards, and then 4 nights a week going out watching games, and then play on the Saturday again and weekend do it again. So, and I had to take the reserves to match it as well, drive the coach. That was a good job, wasn't it? But it was, but I loved it. I loved it because I've still got my love of football. I'm passionate about football. You know, if people want to talk about football, I talk about it for hours on end, bore the back pants off them, as it were. But it's been my life, you know, and even though I've been a police officer for 21 and a half years, football's still been my life, and it always will be. Hopefully, the people that are, I'll say, young enough, old enough, who can remember me, it's been a long, long time now, we will move on a bit. I think I'd like to be, I suppose if you want to be remembered, you know, as a player, you know, I played over 200 games here. I believe I gave everything I could for this club, and I think it's something that all players should do anyway. It is a wonderful club. It's still a family club. It's still something that we all love, and it's the beauty we have here is that we've not got any competition. It's not like being in the Midlands, London, where you've got loads of clubs. You know, we are Norwich from Norfolk, and that's important. You know, and it's our club, and it's something we've got to support them through thick and thin. We know we might get relegated again this year. We don't know, do we? We're hoping not. We're going to be positive and say no, we won't. But you've got to stick with them at times because it is a wonderful club. It's a wonderful city, and I've loved every minute here. When I played with him, he was on the verge of becoming a really, really, really good player. He got a cap for England in Australia, and at the time, you know, little old Tasmanian Devil, as we called him, Mark Barham. I've been told he's just had his 17th operation on his knee, which is incredible to go through that, you know, because, again, because he did something he loved doing. I think Mark would be great to come along here to tell his story.